wife of Frank Zappa, four great children with him. I noticed that Dweezil was here in Austin yesterday, but we didn't want to call her and bug her and try to get both of them on air at the same time. But I think this interview is going to go well, and perhaps we'll be able to get Dweezil Zappa on. A very accomplished musician in his own right. Frank Zappa, of course, was a classical composer, rock and roll composer, great musician in his own right. We had Warren Cucurillo on several times with Duran Duran, and also he was with Frank Zappa's band, and he's also got a lot of best-selling songs that he's produced and written himself. And I was aware of Frank Zappa. I'd read a lot of his writings. I had agreed with him on a lot of things, but once we brought him up a few months ago again on air, everybody started sending me clips of him on Crossfire and clips of him in interviews and radio shows and articles he'd written and sections of books he'd done. And I knew that he'd advised major governments' finances, and the feds had gotten mad and demanded they stop. And then I went and saw him give interviews where he warned about race-specific bioweapons and how AIDS was engineered and how the government was poisoning us by design. And I have to tell you, he was saying this in the 80s. He was saying this right up till he died in the early 90s. And now I've spent over a year researching this. I've researched it years before, but now I'm really an expert on it. I've made the film Endgame, Blueprint for Global Enslavement, which I'll send you a copy of, Gail. And just my respect level, I already respected Frank Zappa, but now, it's one thing to be Alex Jones and people think I'm breaking all this in 2007. But to be Frank Zappa, and of course I know his dad was a chemist and top scientist for the military, and I know Frank had a very high IQ and so did his dad, so Frank had kind of been on the inside of this too. But I have to tell you, I have seen no one more ahead of things in a more accurate fashion, I mean dead on accurate, than Frank Zappa. And so we've got his wife on with us, his widow on with us today. And Gail, it is a real honor to have you.
Thank you so much.
You know, there's so much to talk about. We could talk about the book and things he said in the book, things he left out, whatever you want to, how far you want to go. But talking about Frank, you've got the floor.
Okay, well, first of all, let's just be, let's not do what the government does. Let's not mix fact with fiction and act like the whole thing is factual. And in fact, Frank's father was not a top government scientist. I don't know where you got that from.
Oh, that's like an encyclopedia.
He was a math teacher and a history teacher. And actually, my father was in the military and was a nuclear physicist, so maybe there's a connection there.
Well, three different encyclopedias say that he did work for the government and research. Maybe that's wrong.
Yes, he did, but I think that it was largely where he submitted himself as for patch tests.
Gotcha.
For chemical warfare tests, you know.
Absolutely. So, tell us how you met Frank and really behind the scenes stuff, things we don't know about this amazing individual.
Well, you're talking about things that Frank said. You mentioned things that Frank had written about, like race-specific bioweaponry and things like that. But all of that is as Frank did the research, and I think he shares that in his book. You can find most of the basis for that in the congressional records for various hearings, and especially in the late 60s when they were conducting hearings on allocating funds for that kind of research, and that's where you see it. And then it goes underground after that.
That's exactly what my research and other research shows. You see them funding in 71 an autoimmune virus for population. I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah, it's pretty nasty.
How did Frank discover all this? I mean, what got him onto that trail of investigation?
Well, I think that it's not so much that he's a fanatic about that sort of thing or that he was a conspiracist, no offense, but he, he's just a guy who was very observant and he was quite rational. Most people are not as rational as they think. They make decisions all the time that are completely irrational, but there's some sort of justification for it in their head, so they think they're being rational. But they're basing their information on a misunderstanding or a lack, an extreme lack of factual information. And Frank was very good at synthesizing information. I mean, I think that's why he was such a great composer. I mean, that's a reflection of his ability in that he was a great arranger, and every instrument got its own little voice, which you can clearly hear in his compositions. And if you can do that, then you can pay attention, you can listen, you can watch, you can see, you can process information in a way that the average person is really not as proficient in. Because, you know, musicians, one thing musicians do, unlike most people, is they spend a lot of time in the present making their art. Most people live in the past or in the future, but they're not present.
What do you think Frank Zappa, your late husband, would think of the world today, the war on liberty, the two different wars our government's launched, the new war they want to launch? What would Frank Zappa, nobody knows him better than you, Gail, I would imagine, would be saying today?
I told you so. I think that's what he would say, because he predicted all of this.
He predicted we would be, and I have video of him saying this, in a fascist dictatorship, that we were going into one.
Yeah. But the theocratically based, yes, absolutely.
Now, there are different accounts of this, Gail, and forgive me for moving fast, there's just so much I want to ask you. I do see different accounts of different European governments that he was advising, and one government where they wanted him to be, basically the main tactician with the development of their economy, and that the U.S. government got mad and threatened sanctions if they appointed Frank. Is that accurate, and which governments were those?
Well, it was actually the Czech Republic, but
yes.
It's now the Czech Republic, and it was then it was Czechoslovakia, and he was appointed as a trade ambassador, which meant that he was we had to file papers as acting as a foreign agent, and then his responsibility was really to help develop businesses and promote the arts. And actually what happened as a result of that is there was a scheduled visit from the vice president, but James Baker, who was the head of the Treasury, State Department at the time, formerly the head of the Treasury when the PMRC was invented, went to visit and had a private meeting with the ministers, and we understand it, that he said it's Frank Zappa or it's the U.S. government. That's it. That's who you're going to do business with. So, but Frank's main objective was to warn them that if you do business the American way to get those American dollars, it will be disastrous to your economic opportunities.
Because the IMF and World Bank that our government controls or dominates always try to basically have neo-mercantilism where they control your economy.
Pretty much. I think that's true. But although Frank didn't specifically say that, he just said that you have the chance to, break the bonds of business as usual, and you can step out into a whole new set of opportunities that you can create for yourself if you do business your own way and not the current model.
He also was censored a lot, and can you, give us a synopsis on them trying to keep his music off the radio? I mean, why were they so threatened by Frank Zappa from early on?
Well, you have to understand that it's corporations that are, have business bottom line, and they don't want anything to interfere with their commercial revenues. So someone like Frank, who makes you stop and listen, is dangerous to your format. I think that's the simplest explanation. But he was banned from, radio, and he was definitely banned from primetime television. So the only way he got airplay was on college radio stations and FM when it first started.
Can you imagine what Frank would be doing today with the internet?
Yes, and if you read his book, you'll see that he invented the idea of distributing music over telephone lines, because that's something that he copyrighted in 1983 and wrote about in his book in 1989. Which is not to say that it would have been free, by the way.
Well, he was certainly, just an incredible visionary. There's so many facets of Frank Zappa. What did you find to be the most interesting about your husband?
I think his sense of humor. well, his whole perspective, really, but his sense of humor primarily. Just his brain didn't work like most people's brains, in my experience. Not that I know most people, but you'd be hard-pressed to find anybody else like him.
Now, Frank Zappa's, at least from my perspective, people are rediscovering the things that he talked about scientifically, the things he talked about economics, the things he talked about with music, with government. I mean, are you seeing what I'm seeing from my limited perspective, Gail Zappa, that he's being rediscovered right now?
I think it's interesting that all those clips are now available out there, and I like that people are sharing that. And I do think that it's making sense in a larger context when you can actually begin to see who your enemy really is. I mean, Frank has always been a patriot in this particular sense, that democracy, which was our greatest export. It's a great idea. It's one of the greatest ideas of mankind. And that was something that he was, fully in support of. And because he believed in freedom of expression, and especially for artists, freedom of artistic expression.
Well, now we're exporting torture and lies and propaganda.
Well, yeah, imperialism.
Gail Zappa, the widow of the legendary Frank Zappa, is on the line with us. I'm very honored to have her joining us. We're going to come back after this quick break and really talk about any subjects or issues with Frank. It's such a huge pantheon of things. I don't even know where to start or finish. We'll be right back with Gail Zappa. I'm Alex Jones.
You can run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later.
Gail Zappa, the widow of legendary Frank Zappa.
Go tell that long tongue.
Is our guest.
Go and tell that mid.
And we were just talking during the break about his book that came out in 88, and there were some things that he didn't put in the book, and I hadn't gotten in my conversation with her exactly why, but she said she was happy to talk about that, because obviously I want to bring things forward that people have never heard or didn't know directly from his wife, Gail Zappa. So Gail, again, anything that you think people need to know that Frank didn't think the world was ready for, and that he unfortunately was taken from us early in 1993?
Well, that's a big question. I mean, I think that Frank didn't think the world was ready for a lot of things, including sex, considering who's breeding. But I think that in his book, there were some specific references to the Bush administration or the future of a Bush administration that he left out. Because he felt that it wasn't really relevant to the whole arc of the book to suddenly end in that particular thing. But it's too bad, because it would have been very interesting.
Oh,
it's
certainly pertinent now. I mean, it's certainly pertinent now after another administration, two administrations of another Bush. Can you give us any tidbits of his notes or what he left out?
Well, I don't know that I can be very specific. I'd have to go back. I didn't do the research for this particular show. I could do that at another time.
Oh,
but
no.
I think that one of the things was certainly it's no mystery and no mistake that Bush Sr. was the head of the CIA, and that there are various operations that people, congressmen don't even get to vote on, that the government's responsible for.
So he was writing, what about the shadow government or clandestine black ops?
Well, sort of, yes, exactly. I would say clandestine ops, but they were more based on the favors, perhaps, in favor of the religious evangelical, I mean, here's what you have to do. If you could go back in time and see the kind of shows that were being put together by people like Pat Robertson and the 700 Club and that sort of thing, and you could see direct link to clandestine government ops at a later time.
Oh, absolutely. And now that's come out that a lot of evangelicals are even used in third world countries as government ops, and that they're domestically here running a political operation through religion. And I knew Frank had publicly spoken about that. You're saying he left some of that out of the book?
Yeah, but I mean, you know, he was quite adamant about taxing churches because the monies are unbelievable, and the ways they get used are not things that responsible people in a democracy should be practicing.
Well, I agree with that, but if the government comes in with an attack on the First Amendment, they're only going to use that to go after churches that don't agree with them, and they're going to leave the big corrupt ones alone.
Well, that's the situation that you have. I mean, Frank certainly said this, that no, once the government attacks any premise of any religion, all the religions will come back in support of whatever that religion is, whether they disagree with it or not, because it's their own, it's in their backyard. And so you do have that situation. So consequently, you know, I think it's time that everybody start a church.
Exactly. Then we could bring ourselves from underneath the purview of this big federal monopoly. Now Frank described himself as a conservative, but not in the manipulated modern term.
Well, I think he's a conservative in the sense of, you know, ethics and business practices. So I think financially he's conservative.
What would Frank have thought of Ron Paul?
You know, I don't know. I don't know that much about Ron Paul myself, and I hesitate to make predictions about what Frank would have thought. I just know that Frank is one of those people. This is my personal theory from living with Frank and my own observation, but I think that there are some people that appear on the planet from time to time that have very broad vistas in which they can detect patterns, so that some people might have the room they're sitting in inside their head, but other people can have the scope of the entire universe, for instance, Einstein, inside his head, so he can figure out stuff, right? So people that have the ability to put the entire universe and whatever's beyond that inside their head can see patterns that the rest of us can only even guess at, if at all.
Beautiful. Getting out of the box in a huge way. Final segment, quick break. Long segment coming up with Gail Zampa. And definitely, Gail, I'd love you to dig through those notes. We'd be honored to have you on again.
We're on the march. The empire's on the run. Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
Some folks are born.
Welcome back. Gail Zampa, widow of Frank Zampa, is our guest. The website is Zampa.com, Zappa.com. We have a link to it up on Infowars.com and TruthNews.us, as well as PrisonPlanet.com. And the book still in print is the Real Frank Zampa book, the Real Frank Zampa book. And I haven't read it, but let me tell you, it's on my list of reading. I've read passages of it. I've seen online and seen several speeches and TV interviews he did and radio interviews. We've got a never-before-heard interview he did with a big German writer who's still alive. We're going to get on soon. A lot of powerful stuff, and we've been authorized to post that up on the web, the audio of it. So that's going to be up the next few weeks. We've just got so much going on here because Frank Zampa, you know, even if you don't agree with everything he said, was truly a visionary. And I liked what Gail was saying about kind of this wide spectrum, you know, larger vistas. And I don't claim to have a huge vista, but larger than many who can't even find the U.S. on a globe, thanks to the governmental education systems by design, dumbing people down. I was talking to Gail about what I do is I have a good knowledge of history. I've studied it. It's very interesting. Then I look at that as a lens and place it over the future and the larger vista I see. And then that gives us trends in human behavior. And Gail, can you give me your take on that statement?
Well, yeah, I just think that you have to be wary because history is written by the, you know, the people that end up being in charge. So it's kind of like electricity. There's people that are in charge. They are the ones that are causing all the furor always. You know, so, yeah, I think that that is an interesting option that we have to look at the past and therefore say that, you know, human nature is such that you can definitely see that this is going to continue until people wake up. So the question is, how do you get people to wake up? And I think one of the ways that you do that is you doubt everything. Frank wanted to put up billboards all over the country that said, doubt it. Just learn to say that. I doubt it. And then that's one step toward examining information. And then, you know, just end suffering. Let's stop. If you start with the premise that people, there's no reason for people to suffer, then you want to end suffering, you're going to go a long way toward peace in our life, in our planet time.
Well, it really does just start with finding out what your true goals are and how we can do better things in society. I guess most people never even really think about that.
I think that's true. I know that Frank, you know, he had a few things to say about that sort of thing. He said, for one thing, that the universe works whether or not you understand it, and he also said that if you want to understand something, you have to stand under it. So it's a big lesson in humility to not take yourself so seriously, and it will help you expand your horizons enormously, I think.
Well, that's the thing I've learned. It's the old cliche, but the more I learn, the more I learn that I don't know that much.
That's right. And then the other thing that I like to say is, if you want to take a real vacation, far away from everything and everyone, try reality. There's no one there to bother you.
Oh, that's certainly true, Gail. Gail, I just threw it out at you during the last break that so many jewels that we know of that came from Frank Zappa and your family and you and your great children and, you know, so much great music and art. You know, there's a lot of hidden treasures, a lot of jewels that people don't know, and I have no idea what you're going to say, and I'm putting you on the spot here because I didn't do a pre-interview with you, but what are some things about Frank that we don't know? I mean, what are some of the ideas and things that he never really discussed that now in hindsight you think people ought to know about?
Well, I think that he did discuss most of the things that he wanted to share with people. It just, he didn't, people don't have access to all that information. And, you know, people used to read a lot more than they do now. But one thing for certain that he was good at is educating his audience so that in all of his shows, you know, he was one of the most heavily bootlegged artists of all time because he never played the same show twice. And one of the reasons for that is because he was constantly experimenting. And he had a thorough knowledge of most of the major composers he was familiar with in the last century. And so he would always introduce musical ideas so that his audience would develop an ear for that. So they would, you know, accept things that they'd never heard before, because, you know, you could couch it in rock and roll, because rock and roll is simply defined by the instrumentation. If you have your basic piano, bass, and drums, and guitar, that tells people that it's rock and roll. And you can play anything in that context with those instruments, they'll believe it's rock and roll. So he was very keen on educating the musical taste of his audience. He didn't want anybody to be left out. He wanted everybody in on the inside track. So it was the same way about information. I mean, you know, you make fun of things like don't eat the yellow snow, which seems so obvious, but no one else is telling you, okay, this is your first basic piece of information about what is the obvious, and if the obvious is true. And in that case, don't eat the yellow snow, that's a good thing to know. Don't eat it. Because why? Because, you know what it could be. But he started with the most basic principles to tell people, here is some real information. Even though it sounds funny and puerile, it's real information and it's useful.
Well, I think that's really where it starts is not, you know, I mean, you can boil it down to doubt it or learn to say I doubt it, but also just learn to analyze and ask yourself where things come from. I don't think young people even think about where a steak in, you know, in the plastic wrap at the store comes from, or where power that comes into a light bulb comes from and the processes that bring that to you, or people don't even think about the fact that we're on a planet hurtling through space around a giant sun, or that we're out on the spiral arm of the Milky Way galaxy. And I think just thinking about that every day crushes my ego, and I still have a huge ego, but crushes my ego down to the point where I can realize that we're in such a larger, limitless universe, and you know, then being a few pounds overweight and feeling insecure, you know, isn't as important anymore, you know, and that's what drives so many people in our culture. Or, you know, my nose doesn't look right. I'm not a good person because they say this is the image of beauty. Learning there's a Madison Avenue there that wants to make you feel insecure so they can sell you products in the name of being secure. I mean, there's thousands of things, but just waking up that there's bigger things and larger things and hidden agendas, I think that's the start of freedom.
I think so, yes. I agree with you there, and I think that Frank was absolutely... his name meant free. Frank, is that, that's what it means, is free. And I think that that's his first and most important idea, that, you know, to be free. And he said that, you know, he was only limited by his freedom. And if you think about it, it is very limiting, because if you want to be truly free, you can only be that all the time, and any step you take away from that is a mistake and a misstep and a disastrous calamity for freedom.
Gail, in the time we've got left with you, and I would definitely love for you to dig through some notes and, you know, come back on to share Frank's perspective and knowledge with people. Any other facets to his concern about race-specific bioweapons in their future? And he also believed that they were currently being used via AIDS. I mean, behind the scenes, I mean, did he ever say, "Oh, this is horrible, we got to warn people"? Or I mean, was there off the record concern? Because he always did it so focused and just you know deadpan when he was talking about it. Or like areas where he discovered this, or when he got involved or concerned about it.
I just think that it is part of the person that he was. You know, he was always that way. When you think about the kind of level of the work that he was doing at the age of 24, it's hard to imagine that he wouldn't have already have figured out most of that stuff, which I think is the case. You know, he was always very interested in manipulation, the government manipulating people and buying into that. I mean, it's not that like the government is necessarily a bunch of evil people that are doing that, but there are evil people that take advantage of a situation for their own reasons, their own agenda, which are usually have to do with greed. I think that that's pretty obvious, and historically, you know, you can see the evidence of that in every direction.
I mean, that's what PR is all about, but somehow they convince the public that none of that even exists, that there's nobody trying to influence you. And just believe whatever you see, kind of like we're rats released in some maze and we should never question the confines. So,
well, it's like what, I mean, look, a perfect example of the kind of stuff that Frank would have had a really great laugh over is Blackwater reinventing their logo to reinvent their, their sort of current agenda, which is to seem more corporate and therefore safer and more under some sort of control, whereas their logo before suggested that they were definitely on the prowl for a prey that didn't even know that it was powerful.
Well, Gail, let me ask you, the question, your view on this. They first got rid of Posse Comitatus to allow the military to engage in domestic law enforcement. They destroyed that line, that wall, in the war on drugs. Now they're saying Blackwater, with total immunity that cops and military don't have, is going to operate domestically and be given all these billions of dollars to do it. I mean, that is right out of the textbook checklist of a tyranny, of a police state, to have mercenaries.
Well, yeah, but I mean, the question that no one seems to be asking, really, and no one seems to be up in arms about this, is where is their allegiance? Who do they swear their allegiance to? I mean, now they're calling themselves Blackwater Worldwide. What does that mean? At least our own military swears allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. And by the way, any candidate that runs for president should be willing to go on record saying that they will protect the Constitution of the United States of America. That's something that Frank said when he was running, that he said all you have to do to make your point is stand up for the Constitution, because they can't, they can talk about lowering taxes, they can talk about all these other things that they can do for you, but until they actually say, I will protect the Constitution of the United States of America, then, you know, you don't have a real candidate. So my question about Blackwater gets back to where is their allegiance? Because they're sitting here discussing jurisdiction over prosecution of those people that slaughtered the 17.
And by the way, the FBI and the Army reports say they killed them in cold blood, and then the State Department says, well, they are above the law. I mean, they've been given God level now.
Well, yeah, and above what law? I mean, there's a basic law. They're not above the basic law called murder, even if it's not murder one.
Well, it's definitely a dangerous precedent. Now they're going to be operating openly, coast to coast, border to border, in the United States. Gail, where do you see all of this developing? Where do you see all this going?
Well, what I see is that I think, like the 60s, and I could be real wrong about this, but here's my prediction, that like the 60s, there will be another revolution. And basically, the 60s was just a jump in consciousness, which we didn't really fare too well, given that what we were given. As history has proven, but I think there will be another leap just like that, and that's what I think evolution actually is evolution in consciousness. And once that happens, I think that it's possible that, you know, in the very near future, you could win a presidential election by popular vote with no party.
The establishment knows that.
Yep.
And that's why they're moving with these admitted companies run by the government. CIA runs three of them. NSA head runs the other one, former NSA head. Their own engineers go public and testify before state houses. They were hired for fraud, but still it just rolls forward. So they know that revolution's coming. They're trying to preempt it.
Well, I don't think they can. What I think they're actually trying to do is protect their real agenda, which is, you know, once you have corporate affiliations on a worldwide level with, you know, across borders, where people are buying into, let's say, a major entertainment corporation that crosses every border, then I think you have allegiance by large numbers of people from every country that's very dangerous, because that's when the government can be taken down everywhere.
Well, you're right. New systems are going to form outside of the global corporate system that's going to rival them. And this is a revolution, you know, looking into the future, that I see unseating the elite. And even the new British military report they put out for the future says that the population is going to attempt to overthrow the old existing order. And they admit they're positioning the police state to counter us. The problem is the police state is made up of the people. It's made up of the population.
Yes and no, and they're being made to feel special while the rest of the population is made to feel like victims. I mean, that's social engineering that's going on as we speak. And
oh, you're absolutely right. There's certainly a lot of thugs that want the power.
Or thugs that buy into whoever they perceive as the power, which is more important, because they're not going to be in control. Somebody's going to be controlling them.
That's right. They're being used literally as cannon fodder. Gail Zappa, it's been an amazing interview. I want to thank you for coming on with us. I do want to get you on in the next month or so, and I want to get Dweezil, your son, on as well. He was just here playing in Austin. In the last minute we've got left, anything else you'd like to add?
Well, I hope that people will go out and check out the shows, because I think that Dweezil is doing a stunning job bringing what is called music. I don't know. A lot of people claim to have heard about it, but I think this is your chance to go hear it for real.
That's right. He's playing Frank's music.
He is. It's called Zappa Plays Zappa.
So type that into Google and find out the next city or town that Dweezil and his band are going to be in. And again, Gail, I'd like to get Dweezil on as soon as possible to plug his events, and I know he's in a grueling schedule, and to talk about his father as well, because I'm trying to, I mean, not that he was ever undiscovered, but I'm trying to kindle an even greater interest in Frank Zappa, because I really am just extremely impressed with his foresight, and that he was concerned with the very same issues that I have on my own research been led to, you know, to know are the key to what we're facing in this society. So, again, I'm very thankful to you and your late husband and your whole family for the work they do. Zappa.com. Thanks for defending the First Amendment and free speech. Again, Zappa.com. Gail, thank you.
Thank you so much.
God bless. All right, folks, there goes Gail Zappa. I tell you, I mean, he was talking about race-specific.